warning, what you're about to hear may cause uncontrollable sadness of the heart, running of makeup, and spontaneous ugly crying. Attempting to keep a put-together appearance may be complicated. If confronted by someone in public about these symptoms, the Root Note simply recommends you share this episode with them. For those about to listen, Godspeed. We'll all get through this together.
The following has been produced by PutThemInASong.com.
My name is Shane Yoder. I write songs for a living. And every day, I hear stories transform into songs. Now you can too. Welcome back to The Root Note. You know the age-old question, why do bad things happen to good people? Well, after listening to this family's story, I came a little bit closer to answering that. Good people take what they can from their tragedies to help others who may be going through the same thing. This is episode 3 of The Root Note. Can't wait.
I'm not sure if this is actually going to be the best time to do this. I literally just found out minutes ago that I won a trip to Paris. And so I'm a little bit giddy.
Oh, man.
So if you're looking for a more somber tone, I'm not sure I can give it to you.
Okay. Well, I'm not looking for a particular thing, you know, any kind of tone whatsoever. But if you'd rather call back, that's fine, too.
No, it's fine. It's fine. But I was just... literally just happened, so I'm pretty excited, obviously. So, anyway.
Good for you.
Thanks.
Call is now being recorded.
My husband and I met on spring break. He had gone with his fraternity to Orange Beach, Alabama.
They're a kind of interesting story from the standpoint that they kind of, like, they met on spring break.
And it was the first day on the beach with me and my girlfriends, and we were having a couple drinks, and I saw this cute guy walking by himself because he was going to take one last trip across the beach. And I called out to him, thinking he would just wave and keep walking, but he instead came up to me and embarrassed the crap out of me. And
I saw her, and I was like, oh, man, like, I should go and talk to that girl. But I was like, yeah, that'd be a little strange. Just randomly approach a group of four girls on the beach and just be like, hey. So I kept walking, and then she called out to me and was a little, you know, she was like, hey. So I went over and started talking to her, and I don't think she expected me to actually walk over and talk to her. So she basically, I mean, she didn't literally do it, but I mean, damn near stuck her head in the sand. Her friend was like, oh yeah, you should come hang out with us. And then I was like, all right, cool. So I went to their hotel or the motel, whatever they're staying in that night. And I told my friends, like, yeah, I met this group of girls, and like, I think they're trying to set me up with, like, you know, with this one girl there. And I walk in with some of my friends, and McKenna's like, wait, who are you again? And I was like, oh, all confidence was just gone. So it was kind of a rough first impression.
So whenever we left, I figured, well, this is a nice guy. Great to meet you. Good experiences. Like, we'll be Facebook friends, but that's the last I was ever going to hear from him. But because I had a 10-hour drive, I thought, you know, I'm getting tired, but I don't want to call my dad because he has to work in the morning, and my mom has to work in the morning, so I was like, you know, this guy, he's driving home too. So I ended up calling him, and we stayed on the phone for 6 hours, and we talked.
Wow, 6 hours?
For 6 hours straight, and then the next day, we just kept up the phone conversation and kept up the texting, and 2 weeks later was Easter, and we're both Catholic, so I had different Easter family get-togethers, and he had a school break, so he said, well, why don't I come on up? And I said, perfect.
That was crazy, because when I got there, you know, her dad's like, hey, like, want to see my gun collection? You know, I don't know if that was like an intimidation move or something. And I was like, yeah, like, of course I do. Like, you know, I was, you know, military dude, so I was like, yeah, let me see them all.
We came all the way up, went to church with my family, went to all my family gatherings, met my dad. We hadn't even gone on an official date yet, and
We've
been together ever since.
Without ever going on a date,
he was willing to do that. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I look back and I tell my dad, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, why weren't you guys worried? Like, we could have like each been serial killers. And my dad's like, I mean, we were kind of worried, but we met him and he was a nice guy. And I was like, oh my gosh, like looking back, I'm just like, we really like each other, but in hindsight, I was like, that was just such a silly thing we did, but I'm really glad we did, because, I mean, him being in Georgia and me being in Ohio, like, we weren't really meant to meet, I think.
They did long distance for, like, 3 years, for a long time, because she lived in Ohio, and he was going to college in Georgia, so, you know, being young, and I just think that's a tough situation for most people to go that long and still be happy and then, you know, still want to get married to each other.
Right. Yeah, spring break and, you know, everyone's there to party and kind of be crazy, but once actually like going to Ohio, you kind of, the impression kind of changes because you see people around their family and their friends and how they act, and it's you know, it's a little bit different. So
yeah, and I guess in Ohio, the grandmother always looks at the husband or the husband to be in their underwear, right?
Yeah, that was embarrassing.
Probably kill me to know that I'm going to say this, but I have a really good relationship with my grandmother, and I lived in an apartment, and she was my landlord. And my grandma would always pop her nose in and bring me food or soup or cookies or just come hang out with me and watch TV. My husband, Brian, at the time my boyfriend, was visiting, and he was in my apartment, and I was working third shift because I took care of people with disabilities. So I had a third shift, so he got to stay at my apartment, and I absolutely refused once I left my parents' house to pay for air conditioning. So it was about 90 degree heat, and I turned off the air conditioning to open the windows, and so he got to my house and didn't know how to turn my air on, and he stripped all the way down to his boxers and sat on my couch and was just playing music on his laptop, just chilling out. Well, my grandma decided that she was going to take my great aunt, her sister-in-law, and they were going to stop by and visit with McKenna and her new boyfriend who was in town. And once again, my grandma just walked up to the door. She knocked on the door, walked straight in, and there's my husband in his boxers. And my husband had never met her before and just kind of stared at her. And she, of course, walked up and, oh, here, meet great Aunt Jeannie. And he was mortified.
It seems like he immersed himself in the family, huh?
Oh, most definitely. I have a very large family, and I'm very together with all of my family, and he definitely fell face first into all of it.
You know, she's so sweet and always trying to just please my brother. And my brother is, he's 16 years younger than I am. So he was like the baby of the family. So to say that my brother kind of grew up a little bit like spoiled by two sisters and a mom and dad is an understatement. He might tell me that I'm saying that, but so it's just, I don't know, when I look at it from that perspective of like, and here's another, you know, another woman trying to just make Brian happy. You know, with that hashtag and spoiled.
We had a plan. We had a 5-year plan. We were going to have so much money in the bank. We were going to get so far in our student loans and have our new vehicles and have our home and get established in our careers and go on vacations. So that was the goal from the very beginning. And we had both agreed on that. And that's just the way that life was going to be. That's what we planned on. I mean, but we always knew that we wanted to have, I mean, a couple of children. I wanted to have something more like 5 or 6. He was happier with 2 or 3, but whatever we ended up having, we were going to be happy with.
McKenna comes from a family of 8 kids. So she grew up thinking like that she knew she wanted to be a mom. Like, she was definitely one of those people that I would say grew up going, I can't wait to have kids. And she's super nurturing. Like, that's her personality anyway. So she's perfect to be a mother.
But that 5-year plan got smacked in the face when we were just a little bit over a month after we celebrated our first wedding anniversary. And I had taken a pregnancy test because I knew something wasn't right. And I came out of the bathroom and it was positive and I was happy, but I was petrified because that's not something that we had planned. Our future was still at a point where we were still figuring things out. We were a new married couple. There was just so much that we still hadn't done, but here we are in the throes of parenthood.
Yeah.
And I knew the information before he did, and so he's just chilling in bed, and then I just came out in just utter tears, and I had the test with me, and I showed it to him, and I said, is this okay? And he said, of course it is. And he gave me a big old hug, and I mean, we just kind of laid there and just laughed, and I'm like, I can't, this is just crazy. And immediately I was like, I can't trust this test. You know, my brother, he was pretty much raised very traditionally too, and I think from that standpoint, like, he might have been open to waiting, or he was, you know, open to not waiting, or he, you know, kind of going with the flow of, you know, what is right for their marriage and what makes McKenna happy. So we went to a walk-in clinic, and she looked at me like I was crazy. She's like, of course you're pregnant. You got a positive test at home. And I was like, well, I need to have confirmation. So about 10 minutes, they came out and said, yep, you guys are having a baby. And we just kind of sat there. I mean, we're happy. We're in love. Like, it just took us off guard, but we were so excited. And so we were just ready. We were just ready for it. And we went to Toys R Us, or Babies R Us. I had been nagging my husband to go and start the baby registry, but I was just so excited to start it and look and do my research so I got the best and the safest and the most trendy and whatever all else new moms want.
Yeah, we need to make sure that, you know, these people who are extremely small and take up very little space require a whole lot of stuff. And somehow cavemen did it without any of that stuff, so I'm a little skeptical every now and then.
Yeah.
And of course my husband's like, babies are little, they don't need this many things. And I was like, you know nothing. You know nothing. Yeah. Jon Snow, there's so much that even though they're tiny, you need that rock and play, and you need the swing, and you need this, that, and the other. And it's just, yeah. He's like, well, don't we just need, like, a couple pair of clothes and a pack of diapers? And I'm like, no. We're in for a rude awakening and so much more. These little humans take up so much space. And we were looking at cribs, and we had established this is the crib we wanted, and this is the stroller we wanted. And we just kind of, like, walked around and just played with different things. And I had to explain to my husband all the different, you know, bottles and bottle washers and what a breast pump does. And he's just standing and staring at everything. And it was just something really fun and lighthearted that we got to do together.
Like, you know, thinking about being able to do stuff that, you know, like that my dad did with me, you know, or, you know, being able to do those same things that my dad did with me, but as an adult, but with, you know, a little toddler that, you know, would have been my age with my dad. You know, so it's stuff like that that, you know, kind of really excited me. I think every guy of, you know, in America as they grow up wants to, you know, I guess you imagine throwing a baseball to you.
Really showed us, like, this is actually happening. Like, we're actually going to be parents. These are things that we're actually going to have to get. This is the journey that we're on. Because up until that point, I mean, I wasn't really showing. I had a really good first trimester. So up until that point, this was, like, the first thing that really established, like, this is real, this is happening.
So their first pregnancy, obviously, like, you know, we were all excited and thrilled, and nobody knew that there was any reason to be worried outside of, you know, normal things to worry about in the beginning of a pregnancy. And for the most part, I think it was all going relatively smoothly. I mean, there's always, you know, every pregnancy has little scares and little bumps and things that are, you know, looking back, like me personally, I can look back and know that they were, you know, blips that were really nothing, but at the time still felt huge. But so nothing out of the ordinary from that standpoint. But at 20 weeks, like 19 and a half weeks, I think it wasn't quite 20 weeks. She ended up in the hospital, And unfortunately had a very poor experience in the hospital she was in. And long story short, she ended up going into labor early and delivered her baby at 19 and a half weeks, which is not, there's no chance of survival really at that week. And that was a little boy named Logan.
It was more than just like just being sad. It was a lot of anger and a lot of like, man, like, you know, maybe like I should have done this earlier. I should have done this sooner.
You took a lot on your shoulders. Like, I could have probably prevented this if I would have done things a little bit better.
Yeah. Maybe if I, you know, instead of waiting at that one hospital, as long as we did, like, what if, you know, what if we had just gone to a different hospital, like, sooner? Right. But, you know, if, you know, you're always running that risk of, like, well, like, what if they call me in the next few minutes? Like, what if they call me, like, right after we leave?
I mean, the biggest struggle that we had is that I have a condition called incompetent cervix. So once I get to about 17, 18 weeks of being pregnant, I can no longer carry a pregnancy. Something that we didn't know for Logan. So when we lost him, it was a very traumatic and abrupt loss. But with Merrick, we were promised that we were going to have a living child. I just had to do A, B, and C by way of interventions. So from the very beginning of the pregnancy with Merrick, I mean, being pregnant after loss is difficult enough because everything that you fear and all the anxieties you have been proven true. So, I mean, it's they're founded worries. So every backache, every time your stomach doesn't feel quite right, every time the baby doesn't move and you think they should have moved. So all those things are just tenfold in a pregnancy after loss.
She's very good about doing her research on things, and she, like, found out everything she could possibly know and, you know, what the next steps were. And there was basically, like, a small, like, surgery to help prevent that, without going into all really nitty-gritty details. And she had that done. She started to have a few little issues, and they put her on bed rest, and then from bed rest, she ended up in the hospital bed rest, you know, which is hard. I mean, anybody laying in a bed all day in the hospital 4 weeks at a time is really hard.
It was very difficult for me because of my anxiety, and it was difficult for my husband because throughout the pregnancy, he had bonded with Logan, and he was afraid to bond with Merrick because he had lost someone so close to him the first time that experiencing that a second time was something that it was just too much. So we struggled a little bit in our marriage because here I am being needy and anxious because I can't escape the pregnancy, you know. It's something that is in my mind 24/7. For him, he could go to work, he could see friends, and, you know, there wasn't a person that depended on him and was growing inside of him, so he could almost turn it off for a little bit. But when he was around me, I mean, he looks at me and sees that I'm pregnant. Like, this is real, and it scared him.
I don't know if McKenna told you, but we kind of made the decision when we were, you know, figured we kind of planned for her to be hospitalized at some point. So, you know, we worked out that our routine was basically I would, you know, work all week, and then on Fridays I would come with the dogs so she could see them and spend the evening with them. I would come back to Clarksville on Friday evening, and then we would head, and then I would head down, and I'd stay the night from Saturday to Sunday with McKenna, and then leave Sunday evening and come back and go back to work. So that was kind of the struggle, was, you know, making sure that, you know, my, you know, work productivity, you know, is still high, but still being able to go down and see her, but still at the same time, you know, taking care of our little dogs.
Well, we have Aria, who is she's a Jack Russell Chihuahua, but she's more of a potato. She's a little bit hefty. She likes to cuddle in the blankets, not too yippy like you would think the breed would be. And then we have Ozzy, who's our Cavalier King Charles Spaniel. So he's a lover, not a fighter. He's a big cuddler. He loves to lay on my belly, and when Merrick would kick, it would we actually have some pictures and some videos that would startle the crap out of Ozzy because he would look down and say, "Who kicked me?" And then there was nobody there. And he would turn around and he'd put his paws on my belly, and then Merrick would kick in that exact same spot, and he would, you know, like dogs do, jump back and then give side eye at the belly, like, "What's going on here? This is like magic."
Like, but baby was doing okay. I mean, they'd even talked about sending her home from the hospital. But they live about 45 minutes from the hospital, and my brother, Fort Campbell, is in the opposite direction, I guess, and so they were just worried, like, if something went wrong, by the time he got home and then they got to the hospital, it would just be a while. So they decided to keep her, and she decided she wanted to stay. And then, yeah, she was 6 months along, and all of a sudden she didn't feel very good, and she wanted them to check the baby. They weren't monitoring him as much as they like were constantly before, because again, she's been doing so well, and he was just gone.
Wow.
Just gone. So she delivered her little boy. You know, still early, but at that age, like, it's not, he would have been great. He would have been fine. So that's Merrick.
When I was in active labor, I called my husband to let him know that, hey, we're going to have a baby today, so you need to get up here as soon as possible. And as he was on his way, the nurses were trying to see what the heart rate was and if I was having contractions. And they found out I was having contractions every 2 minutes. And at that point, Merrick no longer had a heartbeat. And, I mean, I could read their face as plain as day. And I knew before he said anything. So, I mean, all of that. I mean, my husband was not there. I could not tell him. He was driving. At that point, I needed to think, like, even though I need him here, I need to be able to tell him he needs to be safe on the road. He still has an hour to drive because we were an hour away from the hospital. And at that same time, I was texting my mother-in-law, my mom, on a group text message, and they were both asking me, was the baby coming? Are they doing anything to stop it? Are you getting the magnesium drip? And I waited about 15 minutes, but I mean, their text messages got more earnest, and I was just like, I need to stop the excitement. I can't. The more I let this build, the harder fall it's going to be.
And they lost him December 18th. And Logan, they'd lost, like, right at the beginning of January. So literally a year later, all in 2017, they lost two sons.
I mean, I was in shock. I had a major breakdown when they told me. To the point where my nurses were concerned that, I mean, I would need to be sedated. I don't really remember too much of it. It only lasted a short while, and then I just kind of, like, I just zoned out and dissociated, and I just laid there. And I don't really know how much time passed. I don't remember feeling contractions. I just remember just staring at, like, laying on my side and staring at the wall and just kind of dreading my husband having to come in and having to hear the news that we've lost yet our second born.
Imagine that they're sitting there with my grandparents, you know, just talking and playing and being spoiled with, you know, all the stuff that my mom told my grandma not to give us.
You know, I did tell McKenna just yesterday, like, you know what, my grandma, I know you didn't, she didn't get to really know my grandmother. I was like, I know you didn't know her, but all she wanted was grandchildren and great-grandchildren. And she is out up there playing with those little boys. She didn't get to know my girls, but she got to know your boys.
One thing that really gives me peace is that my boys are together. I 100% believe that they're in heaven together. Actually, also, like, I've had several losses within my family over the last couple years. I had an uncle that died of an embolism. He just collapsed while I was actually in the hospital. Another uncle was diagnosed with a brain tumor, brain cancer, and he passed away this past January. And my boys have a cousin that went to heaven years and years ago, and I just think that they're all together and they're waiting for me. And the one thing that gives me comfort is, I mean, there's one quote that I'm a real big Pinterest junkie. So I have this whole board on Pinterest about quotes and inspiration and trying to find words for how I feel, because the one thing that I feel about grief is there's really no way of explaining it to someone of how you feel. And the one quote that really stands out to me and just on a deep emotional level is, I mean, I'm probably going to butcher it saying it, but it says something like, I plan on telling my children about Jesus, but now that I'm unable to, I hope Jesus sits them upon his lap and tells them about me.
Oh, wow.
I know they work, they've said this before, they're, you know, openly, like, please don't think you're going to make us sad by, like, bringing up our boys' names. Like, we don't want that to be, like, a taboo subject. Like, please ask, you know, talk about them. Remember them.
I've been donating my breast milk to a NICU called Mother's Milk. And that milk goes forward and it feeds the NICU babies, as well as I donate informally to a mother that is unable to produce enough to feed her baby. So I've been trying to find positive ways and to show that, like, I lost my son, but there was a reason why I have him. So I've been searching for different ways that I can, you know, make his impact and make his life meaningful. I believe that maybe it's something that my doctors and my nurses and all the staff and the people that have worked with me, I feel like maybe they had to learn tiny lessons with working with Merrick and I.
At the individual level?
Yeah, on an individual level. Yeah. I mean, I've kept up a lot of the relationships with the nurses and the ultrasound sonographers and at the hospital. And just speaking to them and knowing that we made such an impact on their life personally, like, they are very compassionate and caring people that they learn something by, you know, working with Merrick and I.
Wow. Good for you guys.
I mean,
good for you. That's great.
I mean, it's to the point where you have to, if I didn't, I mean, I've spent an enormous amount of time thinking about all of these things because, I mean, this postpartum life is not the one I envisioned. I envisioned, you know, sleepless nights and taking care of a baby and maybe having the baby have reflux like my husband did or eczema like my husband did and having to deal with all that on top of figuring out this baby and this baby figuring out me.
Would you have any advice for others going through a similar situation that you'd like for them to know?
I guess a couple of things are is that don't be afraid to talk about them. Don't be afraid that they're going to be forgotten, because so many times I've spoken to people and a lot of times people don't say their names or they don't speak about them because they're afraid of how it's going to make you feel. They're afraid that it's going to make you sad or it's going to make you remember. But what they don't realize is that you always remember and you're always going to be sad. And then bringing up your children's names is like them like acknowledging that they had purpose and they had meaning and that they mattered.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Always talk about them. Always include them in your family. And don't be afraid. Just don't be afraid to speak about them. I mean, I wanted to raise my children and I wanted to raise them with faith and love, and I wanted them to live wonderful lives and be good people and make an impact on the world. And I mean, now that I'm unable to do that, like, I hope that all the people that I love that knew me that are now up in heaven with my boys are taking the opportunity to tell them who their mother is and who their father is.
You know, when it kind of came to my mind, I was literally in the car driving from Virginia to Savannah for the funeral and the service and Christmas, because it was Christmas time. And I just felt really helpless. Like, what can I possibly do for them? Like, there's nothing. You know, like, we're going to be together. And what do I say? You know, what do I do? And and my brother is like my child. I mean, he's so much younger than me. Yeah. I always look at him that way. It also felt like very motherly towards, like, how can I make this hurt less? So I just thought, like, maybe this will give them some comfort.
I think I had to listen to the song about 4 or 5 times because I was just absorbing every single word until I got to that part, because especially in the beginning of grief, everything seems like a fog. So I just kept listening to it over and over. And then I got to that and I just broke down because I was like, it's so true. I understand. I understand 100% why Jesus can't wait, because I can't wait.
McKenna told me that since she's lost all of her children, and she's been so hurt that her mind just serves her the pain in increments she can handle. She said she's cried so many tears that the tears have dried up, and she's searching for ways to remember her boys. This is a song I wrote for her and her family called Can't Wait.
Sometimes questions come and leave us questioning more. It's hard enough to ask why a child must go. So as I try to find peace with all this, I believe, for what it's worth, that the angel of life told him, you're too beautiful for this earth. Is he strong? Is he wise? Does he have his father's drive? How's his laugh? Does he play? Does he love in a new kind of way? What makes this child so great that heaven can't? Say that he is a leader, helping you spread your peace. I picture him next to his brother, 'cause that's something I never got to see. Is he strong? Is he wise? Does he have his father's drive? How's his life? Does he play? Does he love in a new kind of way? What makes this child so great that heaven can't wait? I guess deep down I understand why you chose to hold him.
To you by Put Them in a Song, in collaboration with MBI Studios. All guests know they are being recorded and are willing to be. All music and songs are created and scored by PutThemInASong.com. You can follow the Root Note Podcast at Root Note Pod on Twitter. If you would like to have a song or music created for you or a loved one, visit PutThemInASong.com, where you have a better voice than you think. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Root Note. Thank you.